News brief. Nikki Haley is out of the 2024 presidential race. The former ambassador and South Carolina governor suspending her campaign today. Here's CBS's Nidia Cavazos.
She had no path forward after yesterday's brutal results in Super Tuesday, but it was also her way to say, I'm not necessarily supporting former President Donald Trump and his movement.
Haley says she hopes former President Trump can earn support from Republicans, but she did not endorse him. The U.S. is still monitoring efforts to reach a ceasefire deal in Gaza. State Department spokesman Vedant Patel says there is no time to waste.
It's something that we'd like to see happen yesterday, and we're working around the clock to make it so.
And a testing lab's petitioning the FDA now to recall products by Proactiv.
You should go out and try it because Proactiv works.
The acne treatments could contain benzene, which has elevated levels of carcinogens linked to cancer. Scientists are also urging the feds to look into Clearasil. CBS News Brief. I'm Monica Ricks.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Vice President Kamala Harris in Wisconsin today talking up President Biden's executive order to boost apprenticeships that are helping rebuild and improve America's infrastructure.
Apprenticeship programs for labor and union apprenticeship programs also pay their apprentices while they're in the program, which means that people don't have to worry about whether they have to borrow money in order to receive an education.
Harris met with apprentices who are helping build Madison's new high-speed public transit system. Wisconsin governors could be barred from using the line item veto to increase taxes in the future. A state Senate committee took testimony today on a proposed constitutional amendment. Governor Evers angered Republicans when he used his veto power to increase school spending for 402 years. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Following are upcoming meetings in the listening area for Thursday, March 7th. The Southwood County Airport public meeting will take place at 8 a.m. at the Airport Terminal Building at Alexander Field. The Wood County Highway Infrastructure and Recreation Committee will meet at 9 at the Highway Office. The Wisconsin Rapids Public Works Committee meeting will be held at 5 in the Council Chambers at City Hall. The Village of Port Edwards Finance and Human Resources Committee meeting will take place at 5 at the Marshall Bueller Center. The Town of Rome will hold their Community Development Authority meeting at 3. In Portage County, the Commission on Aging, Aging and Disability Resource Center Board will meet at 4, and the Human Resources Committee will also meet at 4. The Wood County Housing Summit will be held at Mid-State Technical College in Wisconsin Rapids from 9 until 3. You can register at healthypeoplewoodcounty.org. And that's what you need to know. I'm Melissa Kay, WFHR and WIRI News.
Wisconsin Public Schools open doors for all students. I'm Peggy Wirtz-Olson, a Wisconsin teacher and president of the Wisconsin Education Association Council. Public school educators and families work together to reach, teach, and inspire Wisconsin's next generation of leaders. As we head back to school, we hope you'll join us. WEAC, we teach, we inspire. Find out more at weac.org.
A slugfest between the Brewers and Giants. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. A combined 29 hits between the two teams, but the Giants came out on top 13-8 over the Brewers. Reese Hoskins, who turns 31 later this month, got his first home run as a Brewer.
I'm just excited to be a part of it and excited to see what I can do to help these guys to bring another division championship back to Milwaukee.
College basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers have slipped dramatically, losing 7 out of their last 9 games, but a report by CBS Sports says they still expect Wisconsin to make the final cut for the NCAA tournament. Marquette hosts number 2 ranked UConn, but without Tyler Kolek, dealing with an oblique muscle injury.
Obviously an opportunity to play a great team. Can't say enough about Tyler Kolek. It's obviously unfortunate that Tyler won't be able to play, but the good news is we feel very confident that he will be able to play at some point very soon.
That's Marquette head basketball coach Shaka Smart. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Today, mostly sunny. Still a nice day with a high right around 51 with wind out of the east at 5 to 15. Tonight, 29. Tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, 52 with rain likely tomorrow night into Friday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 51.
United Way of Southwood and Adams Counties invites all women to join us for the 13th annual Power of the Purse, Tuesday, March 12th at Bullseye Golf Club from 5 to 7:30. Power of the Purse is a fundraiser to support early grade literacy hosted by Women United. There will be a purse silent auction, raffles, and great food. All thanks to our diamond sponsors, Alliant Energy, Conexus Cares, Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, Paul Gross Jewelers, Walker Cranberry, and Williams Plumbing and Heating. For more information and to purchase tickets, visit us at uwswac.org or call 715-421-0390. We hope to see you at Power of the Purse.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this March 6th, 2024. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, behind the mic. And we're going to have some fun this in the next half an hour. And it will be a half an hour. Usually, when our friends at the Wood County Sheriff's Department join us, we have an hour with them. Had some things come up, so today this will be an abbreviated show. We'll just be the half an hour. And we'll have the best of for you in the second half. Right now, though, want to welcome in Jail Captain Ted Ashbeck. Ted, good to see you, as always.
Good to see you again.
Thanks for being here. And I also want to welcome in Ted Ashbeck. Ted Jr. is here with us. Ted, good to see you.
Yes, nice to see you too, James.
Appreciate the time, you guys. Thanks so much. Right out the gate, we appreciate you. Appreciate what you do for our community. Have your back, and anything you need, door is always open. Thanks so much for being here. Ted Sr., I'm a junior too, so I have to be careful with that, and I should know better. I'm the fourth James, so I really should know better. When it comes to the jail, I want to get an update from you with that, but we have to start right here, of course. We have a family connection here. Ted Jr., you were just hired as a full-time deputy at the Sheriff's Department. Congratulations, man.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Where were you beforehand?
So beforehand, I worked for the Portage County Sheriff's Department, and that's kind of a funny story there, too. Like, I'm working here with my dad at Wood County, but Portage County is where my grandfather actually worked and retired from.
Wow.
He finished his career, so kind of a little bit of a mix of family everywhere and law enforcement. So
that is pretty cool. That is pretty darn cool. So I certainly want to ask the obvious questions, Mr. Ted Sr. here, about what it's like to have your child not only kind of take up what sounds like a bit of a family tradition, but certainly following in your footsteps in many ways, and the added weight of that with the field that you're in. We'll get to all of that, but I did want to note something that my dad actually brought up. My dad loves this show, and he likes trading cards with Sheriff Becker and stuff. So as soon as I said that I was going to have the Sheriff's Department on right away, he's like, oh, I gotta get a card ready. I'm like, well, I don't think Sean's gonna be in tomorrow, Dad. And we got talking about you guys. And he immediately, me and my dad growing up, one of our first things we did together was watch old Westerns. Watching like everything Clint Eastwood ever did and all that. We love Westerns. And he brought up, he's like, you know, that's kind of an old, that's an old West thing. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, that's how it used to be back in the day. It was a family tradition that, you know, that if your family was in law enforcement, that was pretty much where you were going, like farming or some other industries. And certainly we've gotten away from that a little bit. But I think that it's kind of there's an old school kind of like feel to it that it feels right, feels good. And I couldn't help but notice that as we were coming into the conversation today. I think that's kind of unique and interesting. It's not that uncommon for sons to follow in their father's footsteps, but doing that in law enforcement and in this day and age, you know this job better than most, sir. So knowing that your son is going into it, what is the weight of that? What is the joy of that? Give me it all.
Well, I guess it's kind of everything all at once. I mean, you hear the radio, you get a little bit nervous about what they're going to, and then you go, right, oh, he's not on today. You know, those kinds of things. Yeah, you kind of do that, but you don't know somebody else is going to that. But my experience in law enforcement is it's very common for, well, because you have Zerflu, Joey, and his dad.
True.
You have Quentin Ellis and his dad. They were both in Wood County. So to me, it's not so uncommon, although. Yeah. My aspirations for, you know, your offspring is always to be that one step farther than you. And so I'd always asked him to be an attorney because, you know, he's smarter than me. and as we'd always said, you know, I can always use an attorney. I mean,
sure.
Who couldn't?
Ted, my mother just this weekend was getting on me about how much she wanted me to be an attorney. And you're not alone, right, man. You're not alone. Yeah.
But it is a calling that a person has to take. And it is quite a big step. I mean, you are dealing with both the best in humanity and the worst all at the same time in the same incident in a lot of cases. So your job is to sort through it, help those individuals that need helping, and then, I guess, work the other part for the other people who aren't doing the right thing and try to get them on the right path as well.
Yeah. Ted Jr., for you, what was it about this field that made you want to be a part of it?
Well, I think a big part of it was just, like he kind of mentioned it, it's that weird dynamic. Growing up with it, you know, he's always around it. You know, you get the cool flashy lights, the big loud sirens, you're, you know, chasing bad guys, running back and forth. It, you know, has a draw to it, definitely. Mm-hmm. It definitely, if somebody has that calling. But I think the true nature of it was, like, when it came to college time, like, okay, what do you want to do with your life? I had always been telling myself, oh, I want to be a cop. I want to follow my dad's footsteps. I want to be a cop. I want to be a cop. And then and he actually sort of tried talking me out of it, but went to college, had different aspirations, and I said, no, I got to follow what my heart says. So that's when I continued in this path, and here I am now. So
it's and especially from your perspective growing up with it, you get certain insights and see certain things that others don't. So where some people might look at TV shows and movies, oh, I want to be a police officer, and then they get into the job and realize, oh, it is some of that and it is some other things. You know, there's paperwork and other things involved you don't see on Law and Order and that kind of stuff. For you, you had a little more insight to it.
Absolutely.
Do you feel that that is not only part of the reason why you wanted to choose this path, but it also helped you, gave you a bit of an edge going into it?
Absolutely. It, like you said, there are a lot of people that watch NCIS and all the other crime shows, like, oh yeah, it'd be so cool to do this, and they get into it and they're like, this is nothing what I expected, and they're out of it like a year or less.
Right.
But having that insight, like knowing what the other part of it, the 90% paperwork, you know, you get the 2% of fun, the rest of it's paperwork. Right. So it's definitely a bigger insight, even the pros and cons of the job, like the ins and outs at work and out of work, you know. It's a job that definitely can affect you if you don't treat yourself right and go into it with the right attitude. So having that secondary knowledge or that inside knowledge, I think really helps and gave me a better understanding of what I should expect when I came up with this profession.
How are you enjoying it? How are you enjoying the position? How are you enjoying the field?
It's awesome. Yeah. I look forward to every day. I wake up and I get ready. I'm like, I'm ready to go and try to do my best part. You know, maybe, I know the joke is, you know, I got your salty veterans that are, you know, like, oh, just waiting to go home. But if you got, I don't know, I'm just too young yet, or, you know, naive, whatever you want to call it. But I look forward to coming to work every day, and I love what I do, so.
It's really good to hear, man. It's really good to hear. And I think the majority, we know that, especially locally around here, the majority, if not all of the above 100% of people that are wearing that badge or in this position are in it because of passion, because they love what they do. You know, being blunt about it, you're not going to become a Rockefeller doing this kind of work. You're not going to, you know, get rich doing it. And it's not for that. It's for something, being a part of something bigger than ourselves. And I see that with both of you. I see that that's something. You didn't just get your good hair, sir. He also picked that up from you. So that's pretty nice. That's pretty good right there. When it comes to that part of things, you mentioned hearing a call and the worry or some of that and everything. And I think most people out there can relate. Any parent out there can relate to that, whether your kid's in law enforcement or not. Kind of the concerns there.
Sure.
There's also got to be an excitement there, too, for other ends of this, for more, I don't want to say positive, but more fun or positive parts of the job. There are those, and we don't get to highlight that very often with our unit, with our police forces.
That's true. I mean, a lot of ours is about interacting with the public. I mean, we're not always out there trying to arrest somebody. We are out there as part of our public. We're part of it, too. We're that community, I guess, connection to that law enforcement. So I know when I was on the road, the best parts I liked about it was everyone's like, oh, it's the same old day. It never was the same old day. If you think it's that way, you probably should be rethinking what you're doing, because that gives you not the edge of paying attention to what's going on. There are people you'll drive by who are just standing out in their lawn, turn around and go back and talk to them. And all of a sudden you hear about a million problems in your neighborhood, and you just start working on them for them. That's really kind of what it's all about. It's about being proactive. It's about being there. You're not always there as reactive, which unfortunately we know laws are. But and then in hearing the radio, you know, you hear calls that you're like, oh my, there's somebody, you're off you go. And then there's the emergency calls where you're going to a crash where you have absolutely no idea what you're going to see. So you have to prepare yourself for all of it, you know. And then you also have to be going through the questions in your mind about what you have to do when you get there, who you have to be looking for, things you're looking for to try to piece it back together, because not all the time is an accident. Sometimes people are doing things they shouldn't be doing and somebody gets hurt during it, and we call it an accident, but those are things that you're always looking for. So you have to mentally prepare yourself as you're in that heightened, I guess, emotional state rolling to it. So.
Yeah, I think that's a really insightful thing to bring up, too. So many of us, when we think of the police force or sheriff's department, any of these kind of units, we think of you sitting there waiting for crime to happen. You know, just sitting there, just waiting for crime all day.
Like the cat waiting for the mouse.
Yeah. First off, that'd be a really boring job. I think some of that comes from TV and movies. Again, just as a side note, we get a lot of that from that. But it's a great note to mention, I think, not only of the community interaction and how important and how much a big part of that is of the job, but what can come of that.
Yes.
That's interesting to me. That's really cool. When it comes to the jail, sir, I want to get an update for the audience about that. As we mentioned before, Ted Ashbeck here, jail captain. How is the jail progressing?
Oh, that's progressing rather quickly. I mean, it was when we first talked about it, we're like, oh, you're going to see so much action going and so much this. And then once the outside of the building was done, you don't see anything. And inside that building, it is like an ant farm going on. They are building like crazy. And you walk through some of the places where you could walk through one day before, come back the next day, and there's a wall there. You can't go this way anymore. So you're moving around, spaghetti of wires hanging out. You don't realize how many wires are inside of a cell where you go, oh, these people are just in their concrete walls and a ceiling and they got a bed. There's hundreds and hundreds of cabling that go in to make all these things operate as well. And you don't really see that in the movies either.
So, right.
Which is kind of our problem with movies. I mean, they're both beneficial as they show people what law enforcement can do, but they also give them an unrealistic ideal age. But they can solve this in a half hour.
Yeah.
I really wish I could. That would be awesome.
Right. That'd be great. And there's not nearly as much techno music in the scenes and everything, you know, when you're going through evidence or anything like that.
And I show up, I don't put my sunglasses on.
Now, a good catchphrase, a good Lenny Briscoe line or something like that would be great. That'd be nice. Probably asking a lot to have a writing team on staff for you guys.
I'm a little old school, and I have to be more like, you know, put a lollipop in your mouth.
Some Kojak?
Kojak. I caught the reference. All right.
Maybe the smoothest actor of all time, Telly Savalas. Yes. Well done, sir. When it comes to the work that's being done in the jail, it's great to hear the progress. I was talking to a listener, though, before, who was curious about some of the changes that are going on and why this jail is going to be so much safer. And I know that you and I have touched on this, Sheriff Becker and I have, but maybe going over a little of that wouldn't be a bad idea. Just what are some of the highlights, some of the key aspects that are going to make the jail not only safer, but better for our community?
Well, one would be the visibility of everyone. So, I mean, we have our staff, which right now is, you've been into our facility, our current one. It's a long hallway. You can't see anybody in it. You have to go to doors. Mm-hmm. You can't communicate at all. The inmates can't communicate with us. So when something goes on in there, all you hear is knocking on a door, and you have to figure out which door they're knocking on, running up and down, so you have people looking. The new one, with the design with the pods around you and everything designed so you can see into all the corners around you, you can see what might be going on before the knocking would happen. But they also have the ability to communicate with us. We have the ability to be able to see them at all times. And then with all those things going on, we also have the ability to have them in a safer environment. By right now, when somebody comes in, if something goes wrong in their life and they get arrested for it, they get brought in. They're being brought into the middle of our facility where everything is crisscrossing. So you have people going to court coming past. You got people coming back from court coming past. You got other people going to programming. You got people going to mental health appointments, doctor's appointments, all that crossing in the same place. So who knows who has a beef with so-and-so? Those are always on your mind because that has happened. We had people in church all of a sudden get up and start fighting. Who fights in church?
Right.
Well, people who want to get even with somebody, that's who. And these things do occur.
Yeah, anger doesn't wait for anything.
No, and it's anger management is a great thing. We try to promote that to people and coping skills to do with. But, you know, these people have come from places that aren't always the most environmentally sound for themselves. So they are a product of that, but they still have, well, even though they're in a different environment, it's still who they are. I mean, it's what they've been wired to do, and it's hard to unwire some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Especially if you've done some of your own social medications.
Absolutely, yeah. And all these layers to that is stuff to keep in mind, not only for us as a community, but for when we're talking about and thinking about the work that you guys are doing, the added layers to this. Again, it's not as, there is nothing that's black and white in your field, really in life in general nowadays, but especially with the work that you guys guys do. And I think that's really important to keep in mind. You know, I am an actor. I it's my industry. I like TVs and movies. I'm not talking bad about them, but I think you have to take all of that with a grain of salt and understand that this is entertainment first. And, you know, if you want to know the real story, if you really want to know what's going on there, which I encourage every single listener out there to do, talk to an officer. Talk, find out what their day-to-day is. Find out what their life is like. Find out what it's really like to wear that badge. Not only do we create more empathy with that in our society and build that bridge of community and law enforcement stronger, but I also think it's interesting. It's interesting what you guys do, the work that you do. It's something on paper that you step back and like, man, this works. Like, this is how our society stays whole. This is how we keep things in line. This is that blue line. That's so strong and so important in society. I mentioned Westerns earlier. I love Westerns. I don't want to live in one. No. I have no interest in living in the old Wild West. I have no interest in that whatsoever. And I don't think anybody does.
This is a video game.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, now Red Dead Redemption. Boom. Sure, I'll play that all day. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Could fill an hour on that one easily, huh?
Absolutely. Man, just on the horse. I could. I just ride around on the horse. I could. When it comes to the jail update, one of the things that I have found from listeners that they have appreciated the insight, appreciated not only being able to see the building going up and stuff, but hearing some of our conversations. One of the other things that I was thinking about, I was going to bring this up with Sheriff Becker, and I'm curious, are there going to be opportunities for the community before the jail is up and running, we'll say? I don't know how to really word that, but for people to... again, lack of a better word, tour the jail or see some of the jail. You mentioned before those that have seen our jail, our current jail.
That's correct.
Well, that's probably a good percentage of people out there, but certainly not everybody. Oh, you know, here, knocking on wood here, hoping that not everybody has. It's not something that you get. It's not the mall. It's not, a restaurant or something like that. So are we looking for a way for people to, hey, see the new building? People see this. Is there something like that in the works or something you guys are thinking about with that?
I know it has been talked about. Okay. I know the county board members and the Sean himself has been talking about that. When that would occur and to what degree they would be seen. I mean, there's a lot of places inside the facility that aren't really designed for public to be through. I mean, there's a construction that you make that is public friendly. So like stairwells and stuff and lobbies all are. Inside jails, not so much. I mean, it's meant for somebody to be there with you, to be interacting with you, and keep you where you're supposed to be safe.
Right.
Running general public through there, not always the most optimal. But obviously, a lot of people want to see it. I mean, it's quite interesting. And as we were talking with some of the builders at Samuels Group and such, there really isn't another facility particularly like this anywhere in Wisconsin at all, and maybe even further over, because we're changing some of the ways that places had been built where before it's like silos all together. So you had like four columns and all your inmates in these places. And now we've just stacked it on top of one another and gave us a whole different, I guess, one big column so we could do it a little bit more efficiently. And it all worked out mostly because of the space we were trying to fit in. And it actually is turning out to be quite a
that's really interesting
different project. Yeah.
That's a very different approach, not only putting it together, the actual building structure and such, but the way that we're going to be housing inmates.
Yeah.
That's a whole different way of doing it, it seems like. With that, have you guys had to learn different techniques or different ways of approaching putting somebody into the cell, even as simple as that?
Yeah, and that's what I've created.
Say simple as that. I apologize.
Well, and it can be just as simple as that. I mean, sometimes what we currently do may actually work in the environment we're going to be in, but given the enormity of where you're going to be working, it's going to be a little more difficult to do some of the tasks that you could do prior to. But we had put together a transition team. So we took people from inside our facility who are wanting to do extra and want to be part of this project. And now we sent them off to other jails to learn how they do it. So they have multi-level jails, which we don't. So those types of things they'll bring back to us, and then we have our meetings and then to work through our policies and procedures in order to figure out what will work, what could work, and then we put it into place, and then obviously a living document it'll have to be until you can, I guess, finalize it, and there you got it.
You know, as a big believer in silver linings, I personally, you know, I think like a lot of people, the jail should have been built 10, 20 years ago. You know, there's plenty of things that'll tell us that. But we're here now. It's up and running. We're going to have it up and running in the next year. All good things. One of the positives I do think from having the kick in the can that happened with this was that now when it came to the building of it, we have so much more data and so much more information about a way to design a jail, a way to build a jail. And I don't know up and down the state necessarily all the construction that's going on, but I'm pretty certain this is going to be one of the newest, if not the most newest jail in our state, as far as that goes. So the opportunity there for people to learn, there's going to be other jails opening, and you might have people wanting to come here to say, hey, can we just get an idea of what you guys did? Because we're designing our own. Or, you know, the staff there wanting to have some, hey, can we go ahead and have a run through here or a practice here? The opportunities that are there with that is unique and wonderful. And I know a lot of this stems from saving money, mm-hmm. and not having to send clients or however you want to say it to other cities and everything. But the learning opportunities are pretty unique as well.
Yes, they are. You could sit down and just think about it forever. But it really comes down to you have to try to figure out what you're trying to do and then try to move towards that. But not reinvent the wheel if you can help it, because you know somebody else has already had to think this through. So we go to a lot of what DOC, the state, says. Mm-hmm. We've had our state inspector come through, and every month help walk her through, and she sees things that she sees in all the other jails, and she's talking about what we could do, what we couldn't do. So we're working through those projects as well, or those ideas that come from there. We've had people from the state prison system actually want to come and take a look at what we're building, because you know, as they're in need of more space, this may be kind of what they need to do, too. I mean, I suppose they're trying to look at all the options as well. I know Dane County is looking at building one almost like ours now, but multiple stories high. So, because they have, again, space issues down there. So, I don't know if we started it, but we're certainly part of it, and we're glad to be part of it and glad to help other communities work through it, because that's why we're all here. It's kind of a community as well. So,
well, that comes back to one of the early conversations Sheriff Becker and I had in this way that law enforcement is going forward, that you and him kind of been a part of and have been experiencing, and I think help the transition, and people like your son are going to continue with, and that's the sharing of information. You know, when we were kids and stuff, there were stories all the time about this department holding this information and not sharing it. The Richard Ramirez story is famous for that. You know, the things like that. That stuff just doesn't happen as much anymore, if at all. And now it's so much about, I don't need credit for the bust. Let's just make the bust.
Yes.
Like that's, I think, a really encouraging thing for our society and just in general. But that also goes to knowledge and sharing knowledge. And, hey, it's not just important that I know this. It's sharing that information. My first, second favorite guitar player of all time, Eddie Van Halen.
Oh.
In part because of how Eddie was about technique,
sure.
and making sure that other people could see it. He didn't care if he got credit for it. He just wanted you to see the finger tapping. You know, he wanted people to learn, share the information. Knowledge should be free. Sharing of information when it comes to the jail or any of these other things for other people opening up jails, it's going to just make our law enforcement that much stronger.
Sure. What we've seen when we toured them, because that's what the county board and the ad hoc committee and our department went to multiple different places around the state in order to see what they had done and things that worked for them, what they would do different, and that all that information filtered into what we're doing now. Mm-hmm. Of course, cost being part of it too. You don't want to go, oh, everything needs to be diamond plated.
Yeah.
No, come on, let's not go that right.
Yeah.
But there are some places where it's necessary to put things in high volume movement areas. You got to protect those areas.
Both of you, appreciate the time. Appreciate you being here. Thank you so much. Safe travels out there. Be well. And thank you again for not only putting up with me and my questions, but for what you do for our community.
And Sean did give a request. He would like to have a photo of all three of us.
Oh, right on. No problem. If that's what he wants, that's what he gets. That sounds good to me.
Right.
Thank you again for the time, you guys.
Thank you very much. James.
Big shout out to our friends at Wisconsin Rapids Community Media. Big thank you to them and the amazing work they do. Do yourself a favor if you haven't done it already. Go to YouTube, type into your search bar, Wisconsin Rapids Community Media, subscribe to their page and keep up to date on all the great work they are doing over there. We'll have more Midday Magazine coming up for you right here at WFHR, locally grown radio.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
Is it Saturday night yet? Hey folks, Jimmy K here. Join me, Rocker, and Terry Barr for Max Inc. Saturday Night. It's your weekly look at the Wisconsin music scene with a lot of fun, debut music, interviews with the artist, and live in the lair. It's Max Inc. on Saturday night across the Civic Media Radio Network, Saturday night, 6 to 10 p.m., and grab the podcast at MaxIncRadio.com. It's Max Inc. on Civic Media. We are local music.
Matt Nair on air.
Hovde, Eric Hovde now. He will be running against Tammy Baldwin.
He's not a Wisconsinite. He threw his hat in the ring from California. This is Tim Michaels all over again. Businessman who walks in, goes, well, I can take care of this. And Wisconsin says, no. Good to know you. Here's some Kringle. Go back home.
Is that how we politely blow people off now, is to take a Kringle and go away?
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Locally grown radio from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news, talk, and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Hi, I'm Pete Schwabe, an actor, writer, director, and comedian. Join me for my new show, Nightlight, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll chill after a long day in traffic, talking politics, or trying to look busy at work. We'll talk movies, TV, theater, music, and lots of fun Wisconsin stuff. So mix an old-fashioned and join the discussion. We'll go from Wisconsin to Hollywood and back, and you can still be in bed at a reasonable hour. It's Nightlight with Pete Schwabe from 7 to 9 p.m. on locally grown radio, 97.5 FM, WFHR.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The head of Wisconsin's technical colleges is stepping down later this year. Morna Foy has led the Wisconsin technical college system for 26 years. In that time, the system has expanded college credit courses in high schools and strengthened relationships with Wisconsin employers. Nursing instructors are pushing back against efforts to set up a troubled for-profit nursing school in Wisconsin. Barbara Nichols is with the Wisconsin Center for Nursing. She says students should seek out established accredited schools.
You need to look for those schools that provide theory in terms of online and then make sure they have good clinical placements.
The Arizona College of Nursing is being sued in other states for alleged predatory practices. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. A 63-year-old man is injured after a hit-and-run in Stevens Point. The accident happened a little before 5 p.m. on Tuesday, March 5th. The 63-year-old man was found in the West Ditch by a person walking in the area of West River Drive, approximately 0.2 miles north of County Highway Double H. He was wearing a blue jacket with white lines, and a green and white baseball hat and a green stocking cap were also found and believed to be his. He was transported by helicopter to an area Wausau hospital in critical condition. Stevens Point police are asking for any information about the vehicle that may have hit the man or if you saw him walking on March 5th. People in the Rudolph and Vesper area are reporting loud booms and flashes that happened a little after 6 a.m. on Tuesday morning. F-35 jets are training this week and next, but Truex confirmed they were not airborne at that time. And that's what you need to know. I'm Melissa Kay, WFHR and WIRI News.
Hi, I'm Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays at 2 on the Civic Media Network.
And I'm Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media's Southeast Wisconsin News Bureau Chief.
Stuart and I will be hosting special coverage of President Biden's State of the Union speech Thursday night at 8.
We'll, of course, present what the president says, the Republican response, and also talk about what it all means for you.
This will be one of the most important speeches from the president in this critical election year.
This Thursday night at 8 across the Civic Media Radio Network.
A slugfest between the Brewers and Giants. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. A combined 29 hits between the two teams, but the Giants came out on top 13-8 over the Brewers. Rhys Hoskins, who turns 31 later this month, got his first home run as a Brewer.
I'm just excited to be a part of it and excited to see what I can do to help these guys to bring another division championship back to Milwaukee.
College basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers have slipped dramatically, losing 7 out of their last 9 games, but a report by CBS Sports says they still expect Wisconsin to make the final cut for the NCAA tournament. Marquette hosts number 2 ranked UConn, but without Tyler Kolek, dealing with an oblique muscle injury.
Obviously an opportunity to play a great team. Can't say enough about Tyler Kolek. It's obviously unfortunate that Tyler won't be able to play, but the good news is we feel very confident that he will be able to play at some point very soon.
That's Marquette head basketball coach Shaka Smart. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Today, mostly sunny. Still a nice day with a high right around 51 with wind out of the east at 5 to 15. Tonight, 29. Tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, 52 with rain likely tomorrow night into Friday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 51.
Celebrating 75 years.
We got something going here in Madison.
On the ice.
Shoots and scores again.
Against the boards.
He hangs on. Badgers kill off the major.
Between the pipes.
Redirect another fantastic stop.
This is Badger Hockey.
Shoots one, scores. Wow.
It's everything.
For the win, he shoots and scores.
Badger Hockey lives here.
Keep it going.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Do you owe back taxes? Call Tax Solutions now and get some help. For a limited time, the IRS offers a tax forgiveness program called the Fresh Start Initiative. Our team can make it easier for you to pay back taxes, avoid tax liens, and get a fresh start.
I call Tax Solutions now and they got the IRS off my back.
Call Tax Solutions now. 800-281-8193. 800-281-8193. 800-281-8193.
Locally grown radio, your home for news, talk, and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. Right now, looking forward to this conversation, as we always do. Whenever we have Lance Plimlin with us, Wood County Board Chairman. Always appreciate the time, Lance. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, James. Always happy to be here and be part of your show.
And you brought a friend.
I brought a friend.
Thank you.
Yeah, I brought Bill Lightnam, and Bill chairs it's called our SEED Committee. That's the acronym, but it's Conservation, Education, Economic Development. And one of the things they deal with is water. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things we wanted to talk about today because they have a fairly large presentation coming up here mm-hmm. that's going to be open to the public. We want to make sure we make them aware of the issue, the problems, and the opportunity to show up at that. So at this point, I'm going to probably, basically be quiet and let you talk to the expert who is Bill.
I did want to say a note to you real quick, Lance. I was looking at our notes, some of our early interviews you and I did together, and discovered that I've been doing this about 5-6 years now together, you and I and our Midday Magazine guests and everything. And in that time, this topic continues to come up. I think you could make the argument it's the most consistent conversation that comes up, our water quality. And talking about this, any opportunity we have to touch on it, I appreciate that. And especially bringing in somebody like Bill, who, as you said, knows what he's talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, I might know this, a half an inch deep, and Bill knows it all the way to the bottom of the pool mm-hmm. or lake or mm-hmm. reservoir. The interesting part is, this is just something that's imperative to quality of life in an area and to have a place where people feel safe, can live. And one of the most interesting studies I've been part of in the last couple of years was, where is the most in-migration going to happen in the United States in the next 50 years? And the answer, shocking surprise to me, was Duluth, Minnesota. Hmm. You're going, really? I thought everybody left Duluth to go south,
right.
Hit the warm weather. But it was based on natural disasters, quality of life, but most importantly, kind of an unlimited supply of fresh water if you don't ruin it.
So right.
So that's my segue to the guy who can tell you how to get there.
Nicely done, Ryan. It's nicely done. It is the simplest of basic needs. It is the simplest of things that we ask of our society. Clean water. Like, it doesn't get much more basic than that. But yeah, here we are, Bill, with this situation. And Lance mentioned that you have a program coming up that we want to talk about and highlight. Before we get to there, Bill, let's talk a little bit about the history of this issue. and how long you've been involved with it and some of the things that you've seen with this. So let's start right there. Where did this start and how long has this been going on, you know, this organization?
Okay, interestingly enough, James, for me, it started, I've been on the county board now for 5 terms. Hmm. And so it started in 2014, actually started in 2012. But I ran on a platform of protecting our water. And as you just said a few minutes ago, our number one natural resource, mm-hmm. no doubt about it. I think that's undisputed. Mm-hmm. So at any rate, 5 terms on the county board. Over that time, I've been really interested in this, became chairman of SEED, as Lance alluded to. Mm-hmm. I'm also chairman of the Citizens Water Group from Wood County, which sort of reports to SEED. I'm also the chairman of a 6-county collaborative, which is Juneau, Adams, Wood, Washera, Portage, and Marquette. It's called a Counties Collaborative. It's made up of county board supervisors, members of the land, county cons. And then members of the health departments from all 6 counties.
I appreciate all of that, Bill. Really, really do. I also have, my first question is, when do you sleep? Do you have hobbies? Do you have any person? No, I'm joking. But it shows the passion that you have for this. It also shows how much we need this, that we have that many different things going on involving this particular topic. You guys both have mentioned SEED. I don't know if that's something that the community completely knows about inside and out and everything. We touch on that a little bit, where that program started and the purpose of it.
Seeing I'm chair, you want me to take that?
Go ahead. Yeah, it's just another acronym, but go ahead, Bill.
Okay, the acronym that Lance just mentioned is Conservation, Education, and Economic Development. And I think that's a real nice mesh of topics that are related to each other.
Yeah.
In many other counties that I work with, there's usually a land and water conservation committee. Mm-hmm. But we've taken that extra step and included some other departments.
Yeah.
So one of the things I majorly want to do is talk about our program, our event. Mm-hmm. So if we can jump into that.
Let's dive right in.
Okay.
Yeah. No pun intended, talking about water. I didn't
mean
to do that.
Yeah, kind of caught that. Okay, so the date is March 18th. It's 6 p.m. at McMillan Library. Everybody in the area knows where that is. I don't know how wide your radio audience is, but 490 East Grand Avenue, mm-hmm. Wisconsin Rapids. The title of the program is The Future of Clean Drinking Water in the Central Sands. So kind of what we're doing here is we're going east and basically south, mm-hmm. the counties that I mentioned previously. Mm-hmm. What I want to spend the most time on this morning is the 4 panelists, mm-hmm. who will be the presenters. And seeing he's sitting beside me here, I think I have to mention this. The program will be moderated by our Wood County Board Chair and also the President of the Wisconsin Counties Association.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's pretty impressive when we get somebody that high-powered a personality
to be
our moderator. Okay, so 4 panelists. Probably the most noteworthy, the one who will speak first, is Dr. George Kraft. A name that's pretty familiar in the area. Mm-hmm. He's Professor Emeritus at UW-Stevens Point. He worked in the School of Watershed Science for probably 3 decades. I don't know if it's 27 years or 34, but he was there for a long, long time. As a researcher and a hydrogeologist, and what he studied in all that time is issues of widespread nitrate and pesticide pollution, and then everything related to that. Mm. He was trained by Bernard Shaw. Is that the right name?
Mm. You got me. You're the water expert.
Yeah, I believe it is.
And then he trained Kevin Mazarek, who's there now.
Wow.
So when you get somebody like George Kraft, you have somebody that's been looking at nitrates now, mm-hmm. we'll be talking about, since the 1970s. More specifically to the 1990s. And then right on to present day.
Not only a person who knows this stuff and has the brain for this and the schooling and everything, but also the data and the history of this as well. So, okay. Yeah, you're right. That's a great speaker to have there.
And so I know some of the things he's going to say because I've listened to him many times. I don't know where the program's going to go this morning. but I can fill in a little bit of that if you think your audience would be
interested. Absolutely, yes.
Let's go on to some of the other people, though.
And we'll come back to that.
Yep. So Dr. Kraft, number one. And the next panelist is Melissa Johnson, somebody I've known for almost all of the five terms that I've been on the county board also. She was former director for solid waste management, solid waste, for both Portage and Marathon counties, and I think it was at the same time that she was doing that job. She's in semi-retirement now, but knowing her personality, it's kind of what you alluded to, you know, when do they sleep? Currently, she's the executive director, so we have a high-powered speaker here of Wisconsin Green Fire. And Wisconsin Green Fire is a nonprofit that's dedicated to conserving and preserving our natural resources.
Another great speaker.
So while George will be talking about nitrates and a related item, pesticides, Melissa's going to be talking about PFAS and PFOs.
Excellent.
Okay. So then the third member of the panel is Wood County's own Ben Jeffrey. He's number two at the health department. He is what's titled the environmental health supervisor or the environmental health officer for Wood County. But, James, it's bigger than that. Ben is also contracted by our Wood County Health Department is by Adams and Juneau County. So he serves in that same capacity for three counties. And what Ben is going to do is he's going to look at data that was gathered over the past 6 months, very specific to Wood County. Our health director used six student interns from UW Eau Claire working through the wood of it at Marshfield, that campus. And she gave them five things to do as related to PFAS in our drinking water. And so one of the things that comes into play here is everybody thinks, okay, drinking water is just a problem for those rural residents who need to test their own water. Not true.
Yeah.
Municipal systems are just as much involved in this, and I think that's where Ben is going to go. What we did when the three of us met is he was directed to have the student interns look at each of the smaller communities, the Pittsfields, the Auburndales, the Vespers, that have municipal systems, and say, what do you do to look for PFAS in municipal water? So not just private rural wells.
Right.
Okay, and then the last person, somebody I want to spend a little bit of time talking about, is the mayor of Wausau, Katie Rosenberg. One of the questions that I would hope you would ask me or somebody would ask at some point is, who's doing anything about this?
It's number one on my list.
Katie is doing something about it.
Yeah.
So here's what's happened with Katie. They found along the Wisconsin River, predominantly in downtown Wausau, six municipal wells, all sky high in PFAS. First question, where'd it come from?
Yeah.
Nobody knows. Okay. Second question, how are we going to provide municipal water for 40,000 residents of the Wausau area? Well, the answer was we need to build a wholly different plant, different sort of facility.
Yes.
So what Katie was able to do, and I think I probably bear credit where credit is due here, the Wausau City Council and Mayor Rosenberg. Yeah. What they were able to do was to secure $17.5 million from the federal government to build not only a water treatment plant, but a PFAS removal and processing plant. That went on so, that went together so fast. We had the director of public works down here, his name is Eric Lindman, to talk to us. And they built that facility so fast you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So at any rate, who's doing something about this? Katie's doing something about this. And I am thrilled because I've never met the lady, although I think Lance has. I'd like to hear her speak.
I've I've spoke with her once, and just in that one conversation was really, in, like I was already a fan and became an even bigger fan of her afterwards. We're very fortunate in our area here in Wood County and in surrounding cities. We've got a lot of great mayors and a lot of people doing some good work. Katie at one of the top at the forefront of that and some of the things that she is dealing with in that city and the area, not just with this this situation, but with other ones. So any chance I can, I'll shout her out. I'm glad to see she's a part of this too. not only because of the good work she's doing and who she is as a person, but to have other cities represented. As far as I know, and I did my homework on this one and double checked, rivers don't end at city lines. I had to triple check that just to make sure and everything. So this isn't just a one city problem. This isn't just even a one county problem or a one state issue. This is something that literally travels up and down our whole country. And it's something that the only way to tackle something like that is with a large group of people with many different voices and opinions and thoughts to tackle this, because there's people out there that we're losing on this fight. We're people that, like, everybody wants better water. And I would like to think, Lance, in a divisive year like this and everything, this is one topic we can get everybody on board on. Like, okay, everybody wants clean water, right? Everybody. But yet we have people who are getting, like, to a point where they're getting burned out. They just be blunt about it. They hear PFAS in this conversation, they hear PFAS in that, and all of a sudden they start tuning out. And that is one of the most dangerous things in the world. When we get people to not care, when we get people numb to a subject, it's so important to have a discussion like this that we're having right now, and to have this this great Citizens Water Group united and putting together something like you guys are going to be doing on the 16th. I really appreciate that, Bill, and all the people coming together on this.
You know, James, part of the reason for the collaboration and some of the groups that you know, Bill's been instrumental in putting together is not only don't rivers end, their communities don't end at political boundaries. Mm-hmm. You know, we always laugh. People have no idea what capacity we even really serve, and I get people from Portage County that think I happen to be their county board chairman because they live in the town of Grant. Obviously, same aquifers, mm-hmm. same problems. But, you know, not only is this a health concern, which it is, it's also an economic development concern, because that's what I talked about with Duluth, is those companies that look to locate, relocate, to build new facilities and factories, they're looking for this. They need clean water. And generally speaking, Wisconsin has pretty good water, or at least an abundance of water compared to the rest of the country. So, you know, the first part is, as Bill said, is we got it. Let's not. It's easier not to ruin it than to fix it later.
Yeah.
So how can we be proactive? And then at the end of the day, you know, how do we be reactive if we need to put something in place to make sure that the citizens of our area are clean? And I'm hoping that if you go to this program, you come away with some of that knowledge and some of the ability to, on your own, be proactive, or at least work in that direction within your community.
We're speaking with Lance Plimo, Wood County Board Chairman, along with our friend Bill Lightman, with Wood County Board Supervisor and Chairman of the Citizens Water Group. I want to send a shout out to our friends at Wisconsin Rapids Community Media as well of being here. Bill, you mentioned that you had some notes on Dr. Kraft. Did you want to go back to that, or did you already include those?
Yeah, just let's finish up just 1 second, James. The date of that event is March 18th. And then to finish out what I talked about as far as who's going to be there, our moderator, our panelist, I wanted to just put this plug in that the program is designed so that probably the last 45 minutes, let's say from 7:15 on, there will be a question and answer segment for mm-hmm. the audience. And we've sent out invitations to 90 different organizations, politicians, other groups that we thought would be interested. We did this 4 years ago in Nakusa. Mm-hmm. And I was really surprised at that event, at that time, when I walked out into the audience, how many people, a long ways away, a lot of people from Madison mm-hmm. there. A lot of people from the UW-Madison there. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I wanted to mention that question and answer session at the end.
Yeah, I see the League of Women Voters are going to be involved in this. We always like to shout them out, appreciate them. Great organization.
And while you're
people.
Doing a shout-out, then trying to think of the acronym here, the Clean Green Action mm-hmm. Group from Wisconsin Rapids, they'll be there helping us too.
Excellent.
Okay, before I go back to Dr. Kraft, scope of the problem. I really think your audience needs to know this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much of a threat, how much of a danger is there? Some statistics for your audience. 1 million of the 6 million people that live in Wisconsin drink from rural private wells. So that's that component,
mm-hmm.
1/6 of our population.
Wow.
And then municipal systems, let's talk about that for a minute. Statistically, I can go back to 2012. Actually, I can go back farther than that. But in 2012, there were 47 of 611 municipal systems. Now, this is nitrates that had, as they intake the water into the system, they had a parts per million level over the federal recommended 10 parts per million. So they were taking in water to treat. That was water that couldn't
bee treated.
Right. Huh. And then the 10 parts per million is way too high. Pregnant women, little children should be 2 parts per million. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was 2012, 47 out of 611. Before that, in 1999, it was 14 out of 611. Okay, let's go more recently. In 2017, Wisconsin is ranked 11th worst. 11th worst among the 50 states. Mm. We've had 1,400 safe drinking water violations reported to, I suppose, the Department of Health Services or DATCAP or the DNR or whatever. Today, in large cities in Wisconsin, PFAS can be found in Dane County, La Crosse, Eau Claire, Wausau, as we talked about before. On a rural level, the town of Stella, east of Rylander, has gotten a lot of press recently because of the paper mill sludge being spread on potato fields there. Mm-hmm. And where did the PFAS come from?
I'll let your
audience figure that out.
Yeah, I think we can fill in the blanks on that one, which does bring us back to a bigger issue on this, because not a bigger issue, but another part of this issue to me. And I just real quick want to throw in there that it's great to see all these individuals. It's great to see so much of the community involved in this. I want to see more businesses involved in this. I want to see more CEOs. I want to see more companies being involved in this and on this topic. Not so much necessarily maybe these kind of meetings or programs we have, but I just me speaking for myself here, nobody else, would like to see a lot more companies being involved in these conversations. Bill, you were saying...
Last thing is as far as what I was talking about with regard to the scope of the problem. 27 million Americans out of our total population drink from community water systems who have found at least one PFA in their system and have to treat it. 27 million.
That's
so
incredible.
How big of a problem is this? I think when I got on the county board 10 years ago, people were looking at me like, oh, what's this problem? Here's an environmentalist. It's all of our environment.
Yeah.
Okay, you wanted me to talk about Dr. Kraft for just a minute, and I wish I had time to do that with the other three panelists. But here's one of the things you're going to hear from Dr. Kraft, because I've heard it I don't know how many times. Where does the nitrate problem come from? It comes from fertilizer and manure. And he'll say that that's 96% of the problem coming from ag.
Wow. Wow.
96%. Okay, so that begs everybody to say, okay, what's the other 4%? Even though we know what 96% is. The other 3% is from failed or failing septic systems. So that's, we're at 99 now. That's the other 3%. And then 1% is from those overzealous subdivision landowners, people in, you know, city lots, golf courses, that put way too much lawn fertilizer on. You know, it's recommended 4 times a year on every major holiday. Yeah. You don't need it that often.
No, no.
So Dr. Kraft would say, where's it coming from? As far as nitrates, that's where the contaminants are coming from.
And this is an issue, I think, that, we've been talking 20-some minutes about this. And if you've been listening that whole time, you're sitting there, and even if you knew up on this kind of information, it can be daunting. It can be a lot to take in. I want to make sure that it is clear to the audience that this is something that we can do something about. This is something that we can make. We've already made some ground on, and we can continue to. We can improve this thing. This is not too big for us. And let's never forget, and I don't care how corny this sounds, we're Americans, damn it. Like, we get things done. We wanted to get to the moon, we did it. We wanted to do this, we did it. Like, that's what we do in this country. Let's take some pride in our state, let's take some pride in our land, and let's improve this situation, because we can. We can do this. It's not too big of an issue. It's not too big of a problem. It could be if we don't do enough about it. And thankfully, we have people like yourselves that are working on this, and many other people that are. But it is something that it's so easy to get overwhelmed by these situations, and it's understandable to get overwhelmed. Just don't forget that this is something we could do something about, and we need more and more people to be on this cause and on the right side of history with this. What you guys have coming up on the 18th is another opportunity for people not only to learn more about it, but to show those things. Bill, before we let you go, can we go over the program one more time, the future of clean drinking water in Central Stands?
Okay. So the title of the program is The Future of Clean Drinking Water in the Central Sands. Expands beyond that. It expands statewide and nationwide. Date, March 18th, 6 p.m., Macmillan Library, 490 East Grand Avenue. We have four panelists, Dr. Kraft, Melissa Johnson, Ben Jeffries, and Katie Rosenberg, moderated by our own Lance Plummel. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much time you've got here, but just a little comment that I think some of your viewers will find interesting. Lance and I are fortunate enough to work in a nonpartisan atmosphere. Mm-hmm. This problem is nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I see happening, I heard Channel 7 last night talking about PFAS money that could be spent, $125 million. It's caught in a partisan quarrel.
Mm-hmm.
Not good.
Yeah, it's who gets credit. You know, and what we're looking at, you know, how do you blend best practice, which we can work on, affordability, and then incorporate new technologies? You know, where do we go and how do we get it done?
Go to this, find out more, and be involved in this, everybody. Appreciate the time from you guys. Thank you so much for it. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back with some more fun on Midday Magazine right here at WFHR, Locally Grown Radio.
Locally Grown Radio, WFHR.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is Locally Grown Radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Wednesday on Nightlight, I welcome UWGB's Jay Finnerty and Anya Esther. It's Nightlight with Pete Schwabba from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays at 2 on the Civic Media Network.
And I'm Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media's Southeast Wisconsin News Bureau Chief.
Stuart and I will be hosting special coverage of President Biden's State of the Union speech Thursday night at 8.
We'll, of course, present what the president says, the Republican response, and also talk about what it all means for you.
This will be one of the most important speeches from the president in this critical election year.
This Thursday night at 8 across the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Locally Grown Radio, WFHR 1320 AM, W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.